Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena David Slack, how are you?
I'm very well, Rachel. How are you?
Good. It's nice to have you up in the studio this morning.
Dripping wet.
Oh, I know. We're just comparing.
Also, I had to contend with the floating carnival of an ineptitude that is full as fairies.
Oh, no.
But anyway, I'm happy now.
Oh, sorry.
No,
there
it wasn't wild.
Was it a wild ride?
It was their usual problem of not having enough vessels, so that during this winter, send them out for inspection season, they're completely vulnerable to something breaking down. And the 30 years old Kia did break down.
Oh my goodness!
So, what a surprise.
Hey, well, this is vaguely related to what we're going to start talking about, which is urban development.
Yes.
So yesterday, the Urban Development Minister, Phil Twyford, and Environment Minister, David Parker, unveiled a proposed new strategy for urban development that will allow cities to grow both out and up. So what do you think about this proposed scheme? Because it's a little bit different to how New Zealand's done urban development before.
Yes, it is. And in principle, excellent.
Fantastic.
In execution, challenging.
Yep.
And we have this enduring problem that on the one hand we do want to have decent rules, but we also get completely pissed off when these rules are made appear to impede us in any way. So you've got the quite unusual spectacle with this policy announcement of the National Party and people of a more conservative frame of mind cautiously liking it, but saying, but we want to see what's in the detail, which of course we all do. And but this is out for consultation. It's something that will level itself down to detail, but by its nature, some kind of overarching statement that says here's what we're going to compel you to do will be kind of broad. So and that means potentially that it still gets challenged in some ways or other. However, if it has the effect of giving a council, say, in a NIMBY situation of development, actually, no, says here in this in this clause here,
we can
just say stamp, like you do with a non-notified consent. Game's over. You can go home. You can stop your whining. We're doing this development, which of course is necessary. We need intensive development in order to get public transport functioning better, in order for cities to work better, and potentially for accommodation to be more affordable. That's the big bit.
Yeah, it's a sort of a massive part of this housing crisis, I guess, is how do we make these spaces that we need for people to live, but also is going to involve a bit of a culture change.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's how do you rally people around the idea of changing that frame of mind about intensifying or losing that garden or losing
the quarter acre dream.
That dream that's been sold for.
And look, there are two words to describe the way New Zealand is surprisingly reluctant to move forward, and those two words are Coronation Street. You know, there's a kind of frame of mind that just wants to go on watching terrestrial TV and the crap you were doing 30 years ago, even though the world is changing, and even though a generation here now can see that the only way they're ever going to own a place is if we actually change things. And yet, rusted on. And of course it also suits people, follow the money, it suits people to have the system we do at the moment where you buy a rental and you wait and you surf the capital gain and you get your money off the rent, which is in many cases sustained by the accommodation supplement, which is being sustained by the government to the tune of about $2 billion a year. So you've got a lot of inherently wrong problems that aren't easily undone.
Yes.
The thing I think I've talked about it here, I've certainly put it in columns before, is I think the only way out of this is that you make a 21st century Ministry of Works and the government has huge economy of scale to then build apartments, not for profit, but for affordability. And that's what you would put in these spaces that is being enabled by this policy statement.
Any other city with a density that we have and how many people we have in the space we've got wouldn't have the size of properties of people living on it.
Yeah, yeah. You go to London or New York or Paris or anywhere where there's real density and you're
going up.
Yeah, you're in a coffin. but you love it. Yeah, you're in a coffin in the Marais. And so everything changes when you make that kind of geographical change. And you know, there's an irony in this too, isn't there? That you've got all of these people who make their money out of these rentals, who every winter You see them on Instagram going off to Europe to enjoy these places where they've done it differently.
Yeah.
And they, oh, we love Rome.
Yeah.
Oh, we love Frankfurt. Well, guess what? Part of the reason you love it is because it's so densely populated and it's done in a way that is that sees property rental different too. Germany in particular, you know, you're not surfing it privately for profit in the way you do here. You've got people who, in enterprises that rent for life. And just get a steady return and look for their return on the rent yield, not on the capital appreciation, which is just a Ponzi scheme that's screwing it for all of you young people.
Yes, well, you know, we feel that quite acutely when your rent's going up a lot.
Yeah.
Phil Twyford said an interesting thing yesterday, that we have to allow cities to expand in a way that protects our special heritage areas, the natural environment and highly productive land, which I think is probably something that on paper everybody agrees with. But then when it comes into practice, that gets quite quickly contested depending on where the areas are. I guess
a very
present part of that is Ihumato. I guess a lot of people could argue that that is one of those situations.
Yeah.
Of course, there's going to be a big hikoi from Ihumato to Jacinda Ardern's office in Mount Albert today. What do you think that will achieve, if it achieves anything today?
It doesn't necessarily have to achieve a thing so much as just make the argument made once more and to present it to the Prime Minister, who really, it's not that she hasn't said anything about it. It's not necessarily that she isn't maybe coordinating things to ensure that something happens. And it certainly was a good idea for her at the end of that week, where she was painfully not saying anything, to have at the last orchestrated something where you bought time, essentially, to try to get the parties around the table. And that's not a bad way of trying to take the intensity out while you try and get everybody to see reason. I think, I happened to be on one of the Saturday politics talk shows talking about it, and the thing that we were getting from the government then was, or in particular from Willie Jackson a few others, was proposition that you can't jeopardise prior treaty settlements by taking some point of view here. And I was arguing then, and I've been seeing this argument made, I'm not taking credit for it, made a lot since, that you don't see this as a treaty issue, you see this as a heritage issue, as something that sits outside of that, and it bloody is. You know, this is a kind of a Stonehenge, if you like.
Yeah.
And therefore, those other considerations don't apply.
Absolutely.
So if it can land there in the end, you know, I think that's a way forward for the government to say, we recognise precedents with treaty settlements, but this is not to do with that. This is to do with a special cultural heritage area.
And that's what the campaigners have been saying as well, is they're saying this isn't necessarily a Māori issue. This is an issue for everybody. It's an environmental issue. It's a heritage issue. It's lots of different things. You know, you could put a different hat on it, but, you know, it certainly speaks to a broad conversation there. Speaking of Jacinda Ardern, though, Alan Jones, which is, of course, been in the press a lot for some awful things that he was saying, which I'm not going to repeat because I don't think they bear repeating, to be honest. People can Google it if they want to go and find out more. But what I'm interested in asking you, David, is he was saying these things about Jacinda Ardern, things that we should do to Jacinda Ardern, quite violent imagery. What is the consequences of people with platforms like that in the media saying this kind of quite vitriolic rhetoric about politicians or anyone, in fact? What do you think that sort of, I guess, engenders?
There are two possible things this does. I've worked in talk radio, and I've worked on a station, Radio Live, which at that time was trying to, well, from its inception, was trying to be a bit more progressive and liberal than News Talk ZB. And so there was plenty of room for a lefty like me. but then last year, at the end of last year, people will know they changed to Magic Talk. And the clear intention was to go to the right of News Talk ZB and be even more intolerant. And the reason for that is that talk radio really functions as the home of people who want to be intolerant, want to be bigoted, want to indulge their prejudices, want to be told that it's okay to think like that. And that's what people like Alan Jones do in Sydney and in Australia, I mean, and in America. You know, there's rich and steaming culture of it as well.
Absolutely.
And everywhere you go. And it is the same combination of disaffection, conservatism, reactionary, angry, white, older men in particular. And so somebody like Alan Jones carries the flag for them. Now, the reason I was saying there are two ways to look at it. On the one hand, it's a safety valve. It actually finds a way for them to say this stuff and for it to just be words. Mm. On the other, it perpetuates it.
Mm.
And that's, I think, where you have to land in the end and say, this is unacceptable, intolerable. And in this current age of populist disaffection, where people are being given permission to think the worst of people, indulge their prejudices, you potentially weaponize all of that. And so I don't know. So then the question is, do you censor that? And you've got a freedom of speech question.
Well, that's a huge censorship, and yeah, those is. Sort of things are a huge conversation.
But I do think, you know, when I look at freedom of speech, I think there's an argument I like that says it's okay to have a knife, but we also have rules about how you use a knife.
Mm.
And that's, I think, how you look at freedom of speech. Mm. You know, it's not... and we know that if somebody were to get on this platform right now and say the things that Nazis said about Jews,
it's like the pyramid of white supremacy, isn't it? You know, where you've got at the bottom the sort of like idle jokes and things like that people brush off, and then you get right up to the top, you get hate crimes and you get your violence and stuff. So it's all part of that pyramid. Yeah.
And responsible media doesn't employ somebody who does the kind of shit that Alan Jones talks.
Absolutely. Well, that might be all we've got time for this morning, David. There's a lot going on.
I feel like
on.
We need a whole segment to just
just talk about that alone. But thank you so much for coming up. It's always a pleasure to have you in the studio. And plenty, plenty to sink your teeth into out in politics at the moment. So you can go Google if you want to find out more about that. If you want to find out more about the Ihu Mātou petition that they're taking to Jacinda today, jump on the Protect Ihu Mātou Facebook page or their Instagram for more info too. Thank you very much,
Cheers,
David.
Rachel.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
News.